On education for the 19th of April, 2017. Okay, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to have a work session on House Bill 3208. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've had a lot of questions today about a bill up for a work session the day after deadline. thank you for rolling this over so I could publicly kill it. Okay. And talk briefly about it. There has been a problem with 3208 since it was drafted, and I've been aware of that. There was no way around it. It was a constitutional issue. You can't bind future legislatures. And I knew that, but thank you for signing on. We both knew that. Mm-hmm. Thank you for signing on to that. The point of the bill was the conversation. Mm-hmm. That was the point of the bill. And I hope... myself and all of us in this body have realized how much, how fast, and how frequently we have changed education. And we've got to curb our appetite for that. We can only do so many good things. So I appreciate you carrying this over since I wasn't able to be here yesterday. I appreciate you being my chief co-sponsor on this. And I appreciate you not giving it a silent death, but mm-hmm. but one that we could point out. We've got to curb our appetite. Mm-hmm. We have to. Education is crushing under the burden of our good ideas. It's just crushing. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, and also just kind of to reiterate with that is I started teaching in 1974. I know many people in this room were not born, but even in the 10 years that I taught and then the 22 years I worked with educators, we probably had 15 reforms, maybe 12 reforms, and it was everything. And now it's actually the same sort of thing, but different words. But and unfortunately, we don't always listen to the practitioners that every day have to walk into the classroom and do the same thing. So when Representative Springer brought this bill, I said, well, it is constitutional, but I think it's something that has to be said. And I appreciated the research that you did on how many bills we've done. In the legislative sessions in education and how many mandates we've had, because we haven't had many this session. So.
Well, and I think, correct me, Alethea, if I'm wrong, I think this was probably LPRO's, mm-hmm. and I sit on that committee, so I should know Legislative Policy and Research Office. I think it was probably your first venture into researching something for the body, and they had less than a week. I was really impressed with what you came up with.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Vile.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank Representative Springer for bringing the bill. Mm-hmm. It touched off a conversation that actually got a little bit bigger than just the Education Committee in our office and with some of our colleagues, and the idea that we are just really feeling a crush of bills. For a newcomer, it feels impossible to manage the number of things that we're trying to deal with. And I think it bears additional conversation in terms of limiting ourselves to what we could try to do during any particular session and any particular process. In the flurry of trying to get something done, it just feels like we maybe are spreading ourselves awful thin. So I appreciate the conversation. Thank you very much.
Okay, Representative Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I do appreciate this bill.
Then let's pass it.
Yeah. You know, I guess the thing I would say is I've been running a company for 35 or 40 years, small family-owned company, 20 people max on payroll at any one time. And, you know, I've just discovered over time there's an art or a science, or maybe it's both, to introducing change into an organization. And you've got to be careful because there are many pitfalls in doing this kind of thing. I don't know how the education establishment does it, given the number of things that are constantly changing, new edicts, new directions sent. You know, to me, that's just not a recipe for success. And so I do think going forward, and this is probably futile. You get the next crop of legislators in here, and they'll come in with their ideas that they want to see changed. But nonetheless, I think it leads to an extremely unhealthy atmosphere. And I wish I could say that this institution will learn by this, but I don't have a whole lot of hope about that. But anyway, thank you. It was good talking about it.
Okay, anybody else? Representative Solomon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to say I appreciated it, too. Much like what Representative Vile said, as a newcomer, so much coming at us and trying to soak things in, I appreciate his words that I won't even try to just say ditto to that. But also to say what Representative Wilson said, the fact that that we continue to not invest in education, too. So not only are we having all those changes to things that we're asking folks to do, but we're asking them to do it when we consistently cut to education and serve more students. So I do appreciate it was shocking to me when you looked at it in numbers and you looked at it. So I just wanted to say
thank you. We also have two other people that would like to.
Never mind.
This is the next bill. Okay, anything else?
Just
Representative Springer.
Thank you again. And let me be extraordinarily clear. The unconstitutional part of it was binding future legislatures or future policy, even this term. But it wasn't unconstitutional and could stand as far as ODE and Department of Ed, or not the ODE and Department of Ed, same thing, State Board of Education. And they also need to slow down.
Okay, thank you. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 3208. And I open up a public hearing on House Bill or on SJR 6. If you could, we've got a testifier on the phone. We're going to have Alethea tell us what the bill is, and then we'll have Ms. Von Forrester speak.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Senate Joint Resolution 6 recommends that all school administrators, teachers, parents, and students be educated about the potential health impacts of heavy backpacks and avoid its injuries, recommends that licensed medical professionals conduct school osteoporosis examinations, and recommends schools work with the parent-teacher organizations to promote innovative strategies to lessen carrying books of those kinds. It directs the Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction to communicate this information regarding backpack safety to every school district in the state of Oregon. Revenue impact statement is no revenue impact. Fiscal impact has minimal impact. This is the first hearing in the House.
Okay, thank you. Okay, with that, we have Dr. Wynn Sands on the phone. If you would like to go through and talk to us and just identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Chair Dougherty and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Wynn Sams, and I have been a practicing North Carolina chiropractor since 2003. In 2008, I began a mission of bringing legislators the awareness of the spinal and postural damage that's happening too heavy of a backpack, with hopes of bringing legislation or a resolution in every state and eventually worldwide. I contacted Senator Roland to ask for his support in bringing a resolution and or legislation for Oregon, and I'm extremely grateful he decided to help. We address how to wear a backpack properly, but the internal damage that's occurring from wearing a backpack that is more than 10% of a child's body weight has not been discussed until now. I've been doing this for 8+ years. I have no staff, and I get no financial reward. I've not paid for outside lobbying nor contributed to anyone. So I personally made all of these calls to legislators across the country solely because I care. And I'm deeply concerned about the health of our children now and in the future. This is a global issue. I've helped states like Alabama, California, Delaware, and Tennessee to pass resolutions making known the need for the awareness of a weight limit and also asking for further education among administrators, educators, teachers, students, and parents about the potential damage from wearing too heavy of a backpack. Hawaii, Indiana, and the District of Columbia have filed resolutions this year, with Oregon being the first to also file a bill. Thank you very much. You've gone and made history. But the research that backs up language in the resolution, I just wanted to give a little bit of background of how important it is to understand that. The Global Burden of Disease 2010 lists back pain as the number one cause of disability. So addressing the backpack issue is one way we can help our children not be a statistic, or at least contribute to the numbers. A 2010 MRI study showed definitive spinal changes, such as herniated discs, increased scoliosis findings, and postural changes as the weight of the backpacks increased. They found that backpack loads are responsible for a significant amount of back pain in children, which in part may be due to changes in lumbar disc height or curvature, i.e. scoliosis. A 2012 study listed in the Archives of Childhood Diseases found the most common problem was scoliosis or curvature of the spine, which was diagnosed in 70% of the students with back pain. Low back pain and continuous and involuntary muscle contraction were also common problems. It was also found that these carrying the heaviest backpacks had a 50% higher risk of back pain and a 42% higher risk of back pathology. A study done in 2013 at Tel Aviv University showed muscle and skeletal damage are very real concerns. Nerve damage, specifically the nerves that travel through the neck and shoulders that animate our hands and fingers, was also a serious risk. So I think you can see that the research shows definitive spinal, postural, and internal damage connected to increasing backpack weights. And scoliosis is one of the issues that's incredibly difficult to reverse after a certain degree of curvature has been established. That's why we need to find it early and help try to reverse it. Children's spines are still developing. Cases involving pain and or discomfort may be treated with the prescribing of an opioid, thus subjecting our children to potential abuse and addiction habits. Our kids are being subjected to unnecessary pain and spinal changes way too early in their lives, possibly affecting their health for years to come. For example, disc degeneration issues usually are found in people much older in age, like me. And it gives our kids, teachers, and administrators and parents an opportunity to work together to address this issue. It could be a learning experience for all. But I thank you very much for hearing this extremely important issue and would love to answer any questions at this point.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Sams. Are there any questions for the good doctor? Okay, hearing none. Thank you so very much. Do you want us to mute you out, or would you like to hear the rest of the testimony?
I'd like to hear the rest of the testimony because I know who's coming next.
Okay. I was going to say, because it's either Dr. Von Forrester or Senator Roblin, if the two of you would like to come up. Thank you. So you get two of the special people.
Yeah.
Welcome, Senator. So for the record, Arne Roblin, State Senator, District 5. I've had conversations with a number of people for a few years about this. And as a high school principal, I watched some very small people carrying very large backpacks. And being a math major, I always got really big books. They seemed to want to put as much as they could into these books, and they were very heavy. I used to have a tendency to, because I worked as a hod carrier, which is back-breaking kind of work, and I never really had back pain, and so I would always think these people that complained about back pain were not really serious. And then I got this tweak in my back this one time, and I all of a sudden realized I can't do anything. I mean, I'm just not capable of doing anything. So I came to a new appreciation for those people who have chronic back pain. And when the information was given to me, and from the person you just had before, and from other people talking to some chiropractors and others, it became clear that we might be setting kids up for a problem. And you're going to hear a little bit later about why this transformed. We've made backpacks really cool a few years back, and we have every kid has their own backpack, and it's really a big, important thing for them. And then they start not wanting to use their lockers, so they put all the books in there at one time, and they carry it around. And we're going to get more and more kids complaining about back pain at some point, because when you're at that age right now, you can get away with a lot of stuff, but you pay a price for that later on. And I would like to really have the conversation. This bill doesn't do much except the chiropractors and others have written materials already. They'll give it in electronic form to the State Department, to the Department of Education, and they can just get it out to people. And the goal is that we'll get information out to everyone, just so parents know, they can talk to their kids. We can try to solve this problem, not by legislating a whole lot of stuff, but by giving good information to people so they understand what's going on. I don't think there's a lot of evidence that it causes scoliosis, but it causes people who have scoliosis to have a worse problem quicker. So, and some kids are going to have scoliosis. It's part of who they are. And what we need to do is make sure that we don't cause more of a problem than it already exists, or a sooner, bigger problem. So okay. I encourage you to pass this bill.
Thank you. Do you have any questions for Senator Roblin? You know, being former educators, if we only had like the really cool kids would pull their,
yeah, exactly,
and not have backpacks,
really nice,
we would not have a problem. But
yeah.
But we'll keep working on that. So anyway, Marilyn.
Chair Daugherty and Vice Chair Wilson and committee members. And hi, Dr. Sams.
Hi.
I'm Marilyn Miller von Forster. I'm a physical therapist. Oh, you want my address also?
Oh, no, you don't have to do that. Just your name is fine.
Oh, okay.
Where are you? Where do you live?
I live in West Salem. Where do you live?
Very good. Perfect.
I have been a practicing physical therapist for 47 years, including research and teaching with a focus on back health and injury prevention, which are based on habits of healthy posture and movement. Back health in the school environment has been a focus of mine for over 15 years. Sorry, Dr. Sams, I've got you beat on that time, years. I have been a member of Healthy Kids Learn Better Coalition starting in 2005. I have advised school districts on school chair purchases for back health of students and have done extensive research on backpack problem. I think you have some materials I've left for you already on that. I appreciate the opportunity to address this epidemic affecting our children. I thank Dr. Sams and Senator and all of those who are bringing this to the attention of our state. My goal is to provide our legislators with the information to reach effective solutions to this problem. The problem, back pain, strain, postural distortion, long-term effects of school backpack use, including the increased risk of back disability in adulthood. We can solve this problem if we thoroughly understand it. Again, I applaud this issue being before you. Since the 1970s, children have been using backpacks to carry their school books and have suffered the consequences. Since backpacks are off-axis loads, posture immediately has to adjust because the center of gravity has changed. If the off-axis load is increased, postural distortion is increased. This combination of loading and increasingly poor posture for prolonged periods every day is the recipe for pain and injury. If backpacks continue to be used for school, and that's an if, it is crucial to reduce the weight a child should carry in his or her backpack. This is important to reduce the problem or to
Marilyn,
minimize the
problem. We have your testimony, so if you wanted to summarize what we have.
Okay,
yes,
sure.
We've got your testimony
All right,
in front
we'll
of
do
us.
That. Okay. So
but
I will just...
the real highlights, the real
okay,
important
I'm going to do this. Excuse me.
No problem.
Okay, the problem, is it all right that I'm out here?
You need to be in front of the microphone.
Okay.
How's that? There we go.
Yeah.
Thank
Perfect.
You, Senator.
Oh, yeah, or just stand right there with the...
I'll aim a mole toward me or something.
Oh,
over
yes.
here. Okay. My concern, I'm going to address several things. One of them is the point that you brought up, Chair Daugherty, about the problem would be solved if we rolled a bag.
In what I have left you and in the testimony that you say you have read, it talks about the importance of carrying weight on a developing spine and skeleton. So putting the weight in the rolling bag would eliminate that opportunity to build bone density that we need for a lifetime. And osteoporosis is one of our major public health issues, and it's a pediatric condition that needs to be addressed during the growth period. So the weight is not a bad thing. I say what I was going to present to you, again, that you have in front of you. I think our problem is that we're focusing on the weight and not on the posture and how the body is loaded. So this is my demonstration. Because the backpack is designed the way it is, so I'm 70 years old, I don't use a backpack, but and I wouldn't even if I were, well, I'm going into that. So here we have the load off axis, you see. So all of you who have math and physics background, and this is an application of our sciences into our actual physical experience, the weight off the vertical axis does that unless we counteract it, right? Mm-hmm. So the more we put in it, the more we counteract it, right? So that's why minimizing the load is a good thing, but even an empty backpack causes that distorted posture. Okay, so the posture is the center of the problem that causes back pain and disability. So another central issue, and as a physical therapist, this is what I teach in the clinic all the time, and this could be part of our education in school. Load the body correctly. So if you want to get in your bag or sit down, not only do you have bad posture first, but you have a heavy load, you have to do this, right? Take it off of one shoulder, put it on the floor, and you see in your schools, there are backpacks all over the floor probably. Okay, that's another safety hazard, as you know. But the issue of moving that way, bending down to the floor, picking it up, twisting like this to get it on, is the central cause of the disc injuries. Then most people don't want to have to do that, so they keep it on one side so they can minimize the hassle of getting it on and off or having to get into it because it's back there. So we're worried about impairing it improperly and causing the scoliosis. Mm-hmm. But the problem is what you have to do with this to get it, to wear it, and to sit down and to handle your things. So I want to emphasize the statement that is included in this resolution that people should be encouraged to look for the ergonomic design. Mm-hmm. The only trouble is that hasn't been clearly defined. So I'm going back to conclude here. The main conclusion is that I'd like to be a resource to provide really full information to our educational system. And I had hoped that we could add a simple statement on that one line 12B that says schools should encourage the use of ergonomic backpacks with individualized compartments to properly distribute the weight of books and equipment, and add which load the body on the vertical spinal axis with no postural distortion. It's simply the place to start. Make the posture right. The more you load, the better your posture should be, not the worse your posture should be.
Okay.
Do you have any questions?
Okay, thank you very much for that and the demonstrations. And those are the only two people that we had signed up for this resolution. And so I think what we're going to do is close the work session on the public hearing on SJR 6. And we're actually going to open up a work session on SJR 6.
Chair Doherty, I move SJR 6 to the floor with the be adopted recommendation.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves SJR 6 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion?
I have a
Yes.
Just a functional question. Uh-huh. With a resolution versus a measure, how does a resolution direct action?
At the very end of the resolution, we'll go through and say, as in, we resolve that this is sent to the Department of Ed to do.
But unlike a measure, there's no, like, the consequence of.
No.
Okay.
No, what it does is it just, it recommends that something as opposed
Thank
to,
you.
You have to put this in law.
Thank you.
So that's what it is. Any other questions? Okay, seeing none.
Chair Gordon.
Yes, Chair.
I guess I was just curious. I mean, somebody on the phone said it was a bill.
And no, it is a resolution.
It's totally a
Senate
resolution.
Joint,
that's what I thought, but I wanted to make sure, because there are concurrent resolutions.
Yes, no, this,
so,
is an, this is a Senate joint resolution.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, seeing none. Matt, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Solomon.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. I wish that the motion passes and H.J.R. 6 is adopted. Would anyone like to carry this on the floor? Okay, Representative Springer will carry this on the floor. Okay, with that, we close the work session on SJR 6 and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 205.
That's
debatable. Okay, Alethea, could you read what 205 is?
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Senate Bill 205 allows a teacher licensure applicant to teach for 90 calendar days after submitting an application if the person is not ineligible based on the criminal record check and background check required by the commission. It requires school districts complete review of the employment history of the teacher, and it declares emergency effective on passage. No fiscal and revenue have been requested for this bill.
Okay. Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, and Vice Chair Hernandez, and the rest of the committee. For the record, my name is Arnie Roblin, Senate District 5, from Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay and over into Sheridan Fall City. You have before you Senate Bill 205. We had a conversation in our Education Committee, I'm thinking it was almost a year ago, in the last session, in which we had our new TSPC director, Monica Bean, talk about, because one of the issues we have had for a number of years is the ability to get certificates in a timely manner. And there was a big backlog a few years ago. There were a lot of other problems. And we had brought up the issue that it's really frustrating at times at the beginning of a year when you have a teacher leave all of a sudden and you have to hire somebody and you're going through the process and you found the person you want to hire, but they have to get through the process and they haven't got their certificate, so they pay extra to get an expedited certificate, but it still may not come before the first day, so then you have to hire a substitute to work for that person until they get their certificate. And she said, well, you know, there is a solution to that. If we are in the process of doing it and we have all the stuff, if we can give it to them 90 days, a 90-day window, we can authorize them to teach, and they can work, and by 90 days we'll get there. Currently, the backlog is under 90 days. So you wouldn't have to have an expedited certificate. You wouldn't have to have multiple substitutes coming into a class where you already have a teacher. And almost every school district finds itself in this situation from time to time. And you can do one of two things. You can actually hold the certificate of the other teacher who left you in the lurch, but nobody ever really does that. That's not really, doesn't make a lot of sense. So the issue is you just deal with it. And as a principal, I had to deal with that more than a few times, and it is exceedingly frustrating. So we came up with a simple solution, which was just to say that we'll give them 90 days. In the hearing in the Senate, Senator Gelser brought up the concern that, well, don't you think we'd want to do the background check first, and we'd want to do the, we passed a bill back in a few years ago that had to do with, it was horribly called Don't Pass the Trash, because there was this issue about people who, and Senator Springer remembers, there was this issue about people who leave one school district before they get charged and all this other stuff. And we wanted to make sure that people actually had a record, so if there was a problem, we would know it ahead of time. And so we had a bill, and we have an expectation that school districts are going to do due diligence to find out about the people they're going to hire. And so she brought that up, and we decided, yeah, that should be added to the bill. So what you heard today when you were describing it was an understanding that first, you're going to do a background check. Second, you're going to make sure the due diligence is done by the school district before they can actually hire a person. But in the case that we haven't gotten through the process, they can be granted a certificate for 90 days. So they can actually be in the classroom the first day with their kids, with the expectation that in that 9 days, the certificate will be finished. I believe an elegant solution to a difficult problem we've had for years, and I commend our new TSPC director for bringing a new vision to all the stuff we've done in the past and deciding to make decisions based on what makes it work best for everybody in the situation. And I commend the work that she's been doing in TSP since she got here, and I am really pleased to be here to talk about this bill.
Yeah, great. Representative McClain.
I want to thank you for bringing it here today, and thank you for your shepherding of it. And since Monica's here, I just want to make sure that we say to her, we are talking about how well you're doing and how much we really appreciate the energy and effort you put in to your job here in the state of Oregon, and how lucky we are to have you.
Well, she's going to be coming up to testify.
Is she coming to testify?
Yes.
But I do want to say that I have been in buildings where this has happened on a very regular basis, and it's one of those situations where the students really are not being served well, because they get 1, 2, 3 teachers in the first couple months of the actual school year, and that's when you really need the stability and you really need folks making relationships with their kids. And so it's just a win-win for everybody, and it also is a good PR move, because I think it's really important for teachers to be able to see that the organization that's certifying them really care about their jobs and their livelihoods and are trying to make it, you know, a process that works well for them so they can get on and take a job they've been offered.
Because I think part of this was it was just taking longer than, you know, 90 days. And I don't know if a lot of the new folks know, but if you employ an unlicensed teacher, the penalties to the school district can be quite severe, like losing funding. So this is why it's very important to make sure that we've got this. But it was also earlier, even teachers trying to get their licenses renewed, it was like they put it in for 4 months ahead of, you know, before their birthday, and the license still wasn't through. So it was definitely an issue. Any other questions of Senator Roblin? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, and then we have Dr. Monica Bean and Trent Danowski. Don't put it like that.
Bring my backpack.
She had her backpack purse that she was slinging over her shoulder. Welcome.
Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Wilson, Vice Chair Hernandez. For the record, I am Dr. Monica Bean, National Board Certified Teacher, Executive Director of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. And I do have Trent Danowski, who is the Deputy Director here as well. First of all, I'd like to thank you for letting us speak on behalf of the bill. As an agency director, we have a neutral position on the bill, but I would like to personally thank Senator Roblin and the members of the Senate Education Committee, because in September, which does seem like a year ago, but it was only last fall, it was September during the interims that I had the opportunity to testify before Senate Education, and we talked about processes and just some of the barriers to the work of the agency and my amazing team that I have. And so after that hearing, I think the staff member at that time, Richard Donovan, said, well, we can change that. And so that is what resulted in Senate Bill 205. And I just wanted to provide some numbers to you. So in 2013 and 14, we had 1,345 expedited application requests. Then, because of budget issues and because of staffing and personnel cuts at the agency, the backlog grew and grew and grew. So then in 14-15, that number increased to 2,169 expedited application requests. 15-16, it increased even more to 2,938 expedited applications. Now, keep in mind, that's on top of the application for licensure that was submitted to the agency. So that adds to the number of applications that the agency received. And then I'm very pleased to report that for 16-17, our numbers in February, and we haven't run them, I should have done that earlier, was under 1,000. We were about 914 in February, so at the time of the last testimony. So that's a huge improvement. It shows that our backlog is under control. I'm very pleased to say that when I left today, I asked my licensure director, what is our backlog? And we are processing and issuing licenses in March now. So we are not only below 90 days, but very close to being within that 30-day period, which that's 30 calendar days, not 30 business days. So I'm very pleased with the work that the evaluators do in issuing the licenses as quickly as they can. One of the things that I wanted to stress is that by implementing this law and with the emergency clause effective upon passage, is the question that I received in the last hearing was, is there a process in place by which a district, a school, can verify that that background, that criminal background history has been completed? And yes, our current legacy system does provide that opportunity. So if I was a school principal or a district administrator, and I wanted to know if an educator has made application to TSPC and has cleared the background clearance, which includes the amendment about the checking the prior employment history and whether there were any sexual misconduct or any of those other things, as well as the NASDAQ, which is the interstate agency database, that if you commit something or reported or any infraction on your license in another state, we're required to look at that database to make sure that no one has had that history in another state. So yes, that possibility is there, and that provides that safety assurance, because the number one priority in our agency is students and student safety. And so I wanted to provide you that assurance that yes, that is in place, and no one will be going into, preferably no one will be going into a classroom until that has been concluded.
Okay, thank you. Okay, are there any questions of the panel? Okay, as I say, we appreciate, thank you very much, because I know that I had a lot of teachers that were just very, very, when I worked for OEA, very frustrated that they couldn't get their licenses in time, even though they had put into renewals early enough. And they literally were not making a paycheck if because they had to bring in a substitute. So anyway, Representative Solman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just was wondering, is there a, just because curiosity, is there a difference in a fee from a regularly processed to an expedited? So is there a savings there that's being, by not having to go through an expedited process by doing this?
Mm-hmm. Chair Doherty, Representative Solman, there is a savings to the educator, because they were paying the application fee and then an additional $149 to have it expedited, because what that did was, think about it in traffic. You're on a ramp and someone just keeps going around and cutting in the front of the line. And so they're paying $149 to cut into the front of the line, which further caused the backlog to get more congested. So this eliminates that bypass around. And just important to say, yes, that's a fiscal impact to the agency, but it's the right thing to do for kids. Mm-hmm. And that's the bottom line.
Okay. Yes, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So are you changing that expedited process in separate from this bill? Are you changing that? Are you changing any fee structures at the department? Because I know the expedited process, I think, came about because there was just no way to move things forward. So are you restructuring any of that?
Chair Doherty, Representative Springer, thank you for the question.
And I realize this is a Ways and Means question, but I care.
Sure. So on page 3 of the bill, that there is section 6 where it talks about it eliminates the fee collected for the expedited emergency license. This will do away with the need for that fee.
So it won't exist.
Correct.
That's great.
Great. Great. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much, and thanks for what you guys are doing. Okay. With that, those are the only ones signed up to testify, and so we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 205.
And that's all we have on our agenda today. And so we adjourn this education.
On we go.
Adjourn this education.